This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Mbele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. It is now 25:07, and we just departed with a very interesting conversation with Musi Maimane, giving us his views regarding the government of national unity. Very interesting observations there. What do you think? If you've got any views, please share with them on us. Our SMS line is 061-895-1019. And of course, your thoughts by my X handle are most welcome. Let's see, because I think, you know, what I take from this particular conversation, obviously, are critical issues such as climate change, the critical issues such as education spend, critical issues on investment-led initiative, such as transport. This is one example that he has put forward. Also, his notion around, let's move away from the politics of GNU. Let's focus on key strategic areas which would have been articulated by the president. And in his view, the government of national unity is not defined by three or four pillars which will enable government to move forward. Anyway, these are some of the views that you shared with us. And I'm interested in hearing your thoughts. Moving forward, John Foster Peterly has now joined us. Prof, good evening and welcome once again.
Good evening. How are you doing, Rod?
Thank you. I'm great, Prof. Without any waste of time, Prof, first and foremost, what's your take of Musi Maimane's observations on the government of national unity?
Well, I didn't catch it all because I came in late and I couldn't hear the first bit. But what I heard of it towards the end, absolutely right about, where's the money being spent? I mean, that's the most important issue. How's the money being spent? Is it to the public good? Is it transparent? Are we seeing how it's done? Politics is complicated, contending agenda always. But at the heart of it, it's supposed to serve the people as a general group of people, not just the party. So he's quite right to make sure that that's being thought through. And we have so many issues at the moment around transparency and good use of money for the public good that any structure or challenge to that or any good ideas are surely helpful to us all.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Coming back to the point or the issue at hand as part of our conversation, you obviously we are aware that the B20 is currently underway and BUSA and BSLA, that is Business Unity South Africa and Business Leadership South Africa, is convening the summit. They are convening this particular gathering with a view to address economic issues that are overlaid by political side of things. One of the issues that triggered my thought was around the 3%, which both BUSA and BLSA are aiming for. And the question is, how realistic are these targets? Bearing in mind that, our electricity is highly questionable. Number two, we have to locate that in the context of geopolitical standing, Donald Trump foreign policy around reciprocal tariffs on steel and aluminium, let alone AGOA. So these are big ticket items which ordinarily any form of projection has to take that into account.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I listened to a very good presentation when I was attending a BrightRock insurance event last week, and it was extremely interesting to have the geopolitics and the power issues broken down. I think we're in a tricky position. I mean, if you ask somebody that at Wednesday last week, you probably get a very different answer from Monday this week after the electricity break, problems we're facing. But I think there is more optimism really about what's possible in South Africa. I think consistent electricity really helps. And not only does the lack of it affect our productivity, of course, but it affects confidence and investor confidence too. So we really need to get this sorted out as quickly as we can and hope that this is actually a blip and that we're onto a better path. But I think actually, in many ways, we are in a slightly better position. I know that the global challenges are enormous and the uncertainty is huge. And the effects of what the USA may have on Africa under the new administration, of course, everybody's trying to work out and worried about. But yet we have considerable capability in this country. We still have good materials. We still have an economy that can work better. And while we are always going to be dealing with these extraneous factors, we have the South African people and better governance if the GNU continues to work to some degree of capability and navigates the difficulties. We're onto a far better position generally than before. You know, the USA is really caught up in its own challenges, you know, with the so many of its chips being made in Taiwan, you know, with the challenges we saw with NVIDIA's share price collapsing last, you know, recently with when DeepSeek was put onto the market, as it were. We can see there's volatility, but also there's a huge dependence. It's very difficult, I think, to imagine that the US wouldn't respond to some challenge on Taiwan. And it's also, one has to try and understand the policies that the Trump administration is doing. Well, on one hand, they can seem incredibly irrational, but there is a rationality of its own behind that. And that rationality has to be properly understood as we adjust into really a new world order with Europe really less central into what's going on and the need for some rapprochement probably in the Trump administration between them and Russia, if only to reduce the possibility of a Russia-China alliance. These are massive stories and geopolitics. But with South Africa, I think we must never give up hope. We must continue to try. I think we really do have some possibilities. And the G20 coming this year, while it might be over-egged and hyped, can actually offer us considerable benefits if we manage it well.
Absolutely. One of the issues that you briefly touched on, Prof, is that of AGOA. We all know that Trump favors, as part of the ongoing conversation, which I think will be tabled or discussed at the B20 in Cape Town, it is that of AGOA. And South Africa stand to first page minimum. Say, what is your take? Do you think South Africa's position in AGOA will remain? And if not, what are the ramifications we need to brace ourselves for, particularly in the automotive as well and agricultural product?
Well, I've heard different opinions on this. And my personal opinion, I think we probably will be out of AGOA. I think it's highly likely, more likely than not. I would hope not. But then what's the effect? Some people have explained or have the position that the markets have taken out some of the effects of that, and the real impact is going to be on the automotive sector. And the other alternative to perspective on that is, well, if Trump does impose tariffs, then the effect of those tariffs won't be, everyone's going to be in the same boat, as it were. You know, everyone's going to have tariffs on their vehicles. We'll be slightly disadvantaged, but might not be so bad overall for us as we might expect. Again, these are imponderables, and I'm certainly not somebody who's expert enough to give a definitive opinion on these, but those reflect some of the opinions I've heard and seem quite telling to me.
And yes, indeed. One of the issues that you and I have had numerous conversation on has got to do with the amendment of the state enterprises, which dismally failed last year. And this is one issue, presumably, in fact, invariably has to be tabled by the B20. It is that of how to reinvigorate the state-owned enterprises fraternity, given the fact that they play a significant role in the economy. But the current economic reform is unlikely to proceed under the current legislative framework. How important do you think, or what are your thoughts around the movement of pro business in the SOE legislative framework that did not take off last year?
Well, I think it's absolutely critical. Obviously, I mean, probably I would say that the governance of the SOEs gets really properly managed. I think the underlying issues are probably far bigger than are being talked about in terms of criminality, control over supplies and control over operations, etc., than people would like to talk about or even accept to talk about. But we have to do something about it, because the country simply can't grow with dysfunctional state enterprises, particularly Transnet, Eskom and others. So obviously it can't, because you can't get the goods to and from the ports, you can't get them off the ships, the roads are breaking down because of the extra trucks on them, and the electricity uncertainty makes life very, very hard for everybody. There is another school of thought saying that actually some of the SOEs are being sort of invisibly privatized anyway, and by death by a thousand cuts, by small adjustments to supply or different affiliations and different suppliers coming to it, and in a good way in this case. So I think that nobody's going to have a lot of faith in South Africa in terms of putting their businesses here, and unless they can get their money out and that the infrastructure works. So we're not going to get investments or companies coming here to the same extent we might, nor our own going to be able to work. So we have to tackle this. And it's very easy to paint a picture of how gloomy that is, but that's not the way out of it. We have to understand the reality, make reality your friend, as Norman Adamy from SAB always used to say, and work out how, in the face of really quite difficult circumstances, we make some progress. And it comes at the very heart of it, it's about trust. Trust between people running companies, trust of agreements, trust that you can get money out, and trust in our basic capabilities as South African to actually perform well. And I have a high belief that that's possible, because I see so many people coming through Henley Business School and elsewhere who are enormously capable and who have come from literally nothing to show what they're able to do, and are performing at an extremely high level of insight and capability. So I know this is conceptually possible. Clearly, I think that we have to depoliticize an awful lot of our operations and put the political ball where it should be, between the goalposts of providing the capability for businesses to grow, because it's absolutely clear that most growth and employment will come from business. We also have got to make sure that the public sector is managed in such a way that's able to do that and isn't feathering its own nets with increases in salaries which are not justified, and is hugely focusing on productivity and service. And all these things require a capability of leadership and some form of political stability, which is hard to achieve. But nonetheless, we cannot for a moment give up trying to do that, however hard it is. And I believe in the resilience and the determination of South African people to do just that over time. By no easy pass, but I think we can win this argument.
Absolutely. If you've just joined us, it's now 12 minutes to 7 o'clock. I'm having an interesting conversation with Professor John Foster Piddley, who is a Dean and Director at Henley Business School, giving us his thoughts around the B20, which is currently underway in Cape Town. We all know this is a structure that runs parallel to the G20, which looks at the business side of things. So it is quite interesting. But Prof, one of the things that as a way forward, particularly in the role of state-owned enterprises, on the kind of leadership that is required to steer them towards a direction that is productive, it has got to do with the private public partnerships. But before we get to that, let's quickly take a break as we gravitate towards the end of the show. I want to hear your thoughts on where we are on PPP and how is it in the refined bill on the national state enterprises can be infused in a much more rigorous way to promote private equity to participate in the SOE environment.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Dembele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. We literally have about 5 minutes or so to go. It's amazing how time flies when you're having thought-provoking conversations with the likes of Professor John Foster Piddley, who is a Dean and Director at the Henley Business School. Before we took that short break, I put it to Prof, the importance of private-public partnership in the context of ailing state-owned enterprises, which we understand that the National Enterprises Bill, which was ushered, which ought to have taken off last year, did not take place purely because it did not articulate the private partnership with as it should. And this is something that the B20 conversation or summit that is underway ought to put it in the center. Your take on that, Prof?
Well, I think, you know, we've all talked a lot about public-private partnerships and can private organizations take and businesses take up an equity stake in public enterprises. Obviously, what people worry about is that, you know, that the partnerships will actually draw away, it will privatize essential services, it'll be taken by an elite, business elite, and it will exclude low-income communities. And so how do you balance profit motives with public welfare motives? I mean, we talk about profit as if it is always profiteering, maximum profit to be excluded. But I think more and more organizations are understanding that their long-term welfare is not about profiteering madly. Of course, you have to make profits because you've got to get more back in than you put out, and you've got to invest in people, in improvements, in growth, and pay off stakeholders. That is the system we're in. But also for sustainability as a business, you need to be felt to be part. You need welfare. You know, you look what's happening to Tesla now with the protests in London and people sticking up signs and saying, you know, from naught to 1939 in 3 seconds, you know, with a Musk with a you know, fascist salute, you know, and now how people are selling off their Teslas. And we've seen many instances where the businesses that are not perceived to be useful start losing clients. And particularly in South Africa and Africa, where the agenda now on useful businesses that are contributing to growth in society and long-term welfare of the country are really, really important. So I think public-private partnerships offer a huge amount of opportunity. They really must. And the question is, can the private sector invest in them in a way that they can collaborate with public good? And can the public sector actually manage the engagement with private sector and have the sort of level of governance and capability to use that money and produce it? And can it handle, you know, corruption? Because we always talk about corruption. I'm not going to sit here and complain about it. I'm just going to say we have to be aware what it is and manage it out the system, because it's a cancer that will break everything down. And the people who suffer from that are always the poorest people in the country because we don't get the growth we need. So we can do that. So, you know, job creation will help. You know, we need to make sure the rand fluctuations don't affect it. But you mentioned the B20 as well and the G20. Can I mention that for a moment, Nimrod?
Sure, John.
Because I think what people don't necessarily understand what the B20 is. The B20 is the official business engagement group of the group of 20, the G20 countries. So it's the 20 countries, business people in those 20 countries, gathering together to provide policy advice and recommendations to the G20 leaders. And this year, South Africa is hosting that. Cascavadia is doing a huge job in managing that. We have two really capable South African co-chairs there managing it, and it includes business organizations, multinationals, and leaders from all the G20 countries. So now we're in South Africa are holding the focus for those other 20 countries, gathering in opinions from those other countries, and we're the people who have the accountability to feed all those perspectives through to the B20 at the meeting. So it's a hugely significant role we have, and if we play well, we will be able to offer policy insights and pressures also on the G20 to accept, and advice too about how to accept interest's perspective. And we have to do it well, because there's no saying that the G20 countries with all the variety you have there will accept these things. But we have to try and get some inroads into policy that will be business friendly across all these places. So it'll help us, I think, because it'll help us expand our trade with the G20. It'll maybe promote South African goods. It could help. It could certainly do a lot about the perception of South Africa on a world stage. You know, we're seeing so many challenges now. And it could present us as a fair broker, a strong advisor, and highlight just the capability. I mean, Brazil got a real dividend out of this last year, and we can too. So support the B20 in your businesses. Get hold of the people who are driving it. Look it up. and offer advice, offer support, because this is a really good way that we can get promote infrastructure, collab PPPs if you want, and just help improve our roads and railways. We can help the digital economy, we can help startups and fintechs, and it gives us a voice in global economic policies that we really don't have. So the B20 is offers us, through the G20, a really powerful moment to make a difference. And please, let's not have us ignore or not notice the potential impact of being involved here. We can actually have our voice heard in a way that we very rarely, once in 20 years in this case, get an opportunity to do.
What I like about you know your articulation, John, you come across as a very good patriot, because we often undermine ourselves when you've got a global platform such as these. South Africa is standing in a very unique situation to influence. I like the idea of a perception. South Africa does not have a positive perception out there. And when you look at what happened in the US, what happened in Europe, particularly around crime, and these are big ticket items that crowd out investment. By hosting this particular event, we are likely to reinforce a very positive image that looks at investment or that looks at Africa. But you know, beyond just that posture, you know, the perception of investment ready has to be accompanied by economic policies that are embracing the investment trajectory of the world. And I'm not sure whether that's where we are. The reason I'm asking this question, John, is that we are competing with other emerging countries and capital flight very quickly. As we recap this particular issue, what is it that we need to be doing differently while using this particular platform to profile South Africa better, but without necessarily undoing the policies that undermine the very same, economic trajectory or posture that we want to see ourselves in?
Well, you know, our global reputation really matters, and we've done many things, you know, many countries do, to spoil that. But, you know, we tend to think that once you've besmirched your reputation with people, that's it forever. But life ain't like that. You know, J.D. Vance was trashing, you know, Trump just a few years ago, and has come to a completely different perspective now. And you'll see it happen on every angle. You might have an opinion, and we might believe that the world is entirely fair, and we'll always listen to fairness. But actually, the world is driven very often by perceptions, opinion, and by the current drive you have. We've got a chance to present South Africa now as having a forceful voice of something good. We can change. I believe in redemption. We can change from something that wasn't good into something better. But we have to walk the talk, and we have to speak about that. So let's say that South Africa is something really special. And let's not be enormously, let's not have fake humility, you know. I remember there was this lovely story that's about Mother Teresa, and somebody was being very humble around her. And she said, "Why are you being so humble? You're not great enough to be humble." And I thought, I think there's some truth in that. You know, we can speak out for ourselves. If we're not going to articulate what we can do, then who is?
Absolutely.
So let's push the boundaries out a bit and say what we can do, and make change happen by the force of our voice and our perception. So it's always going to be painful, but then what isn't? So
absolutely.
This could also be fun.
Absolutely. Prof, thank you. Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it here. We have run out of time. Thank you so much for gracing Beyond Governance with your show, with your presence once again. And you always come across as very insightful. And I wonder why you're prof.
That's very kind of you. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Professor Jonathan Pederley, who is the Dean and Director at the Henley Business School, giving us his perspective on the B20 that has started today. Earlier on, we had a conversation with Musi Maimane, who is the leader of Build One South Africa. He then also gave us a very insights on the complexities around government of national unity. And again, these are very complex issues and pockets of excellence that we need to pull from out of each and every situation, and we often hard on ourselves for the right reasons. But having said that, we're going to have to leave it here. Craig, thank you very much for, you know, controlling. And I also want to thank the producers of the show for putting lining up the likes of John Pederle here as well as Musi Maimane. It has been absolutely a pleasure. I hope we have certainly fed your ears and we have done a sterling work as you know, to much to your delight. Having said that, have yourself a beautiful evening. Until we do this again, shalom.